Well, Pastor Steve Bernard, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining us today. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, yeah. It's really good to be able to talk to you today and hear some of your story and I think talk about the subject of anxiety and where and how it's been in your life and you know, I suppose your journey with it or its journey with you over the years. But before we do that, can you tell us a little bit about you?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, my name's Steve and I'm married to Claire. Uh-huh. We've been married for 14 years. We've got three boys together, Samuel, Jackson and Levi. They're 12, 10 and 7. So a lot of fun with them, a lot of energy. I serve as a pastor at Gordon Baptist Church.
Okay.
In Sydney, and been there for about 5 years.
Okay. Is that the first pastoring job that you had, or is it that's the start of it?
I've been accredited as a pastor in this role, but before I was a worship pastor at Northside Baptist Church.
So married 14 years, three boys. So how old are your boys again?
They're 12, 10 and 7.
12, 10 and 7. So you've got a busy house?
We do. We've got a full-on house. It's a lot of fun.
How has that been for you guys during the past couple of years?
Well, I feel really fortunate that we have a house to live in.
Yeah.
We were previously in a unit and we moved here about a year before the COVID and the lockdowns. And so we've got yard, we've got a street for the kids to ride on, we've got space in the home for them to them to be away from us for some of the time, you know, having their own area. And so, yeah, just really, really thankful for that. But at the same time, it's been a challenge going through homeschooling and all that and working from home and disrupted schedules has been a significant challenge.
Yeah, yeah. And, and three boys, they like to be on the move.
They do. They like to do stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
They like to tell you what they're going to do.
Yeah. Before and after they've done it. And just on the part, I don't want to launch straight into the past few years, but just thinking about that as a pastor, just how's in a couple of senses, how's that been for you?
For me personally, yeah, it's been a challenge. You know, if we're thinking about in terms of anxiety, it has been a season of anxiety for many, many people.
Yeah.
And I'm someone that has also experienced that in my role in pastoring as a husband and a father. And so it's been a challenge for me to work out how to navigate that personally in myself, as well as navigate that in a leadership role in the church.
Have you found as a pastor you've had to operate in the past couple of years outside of your giftings in terms of what you had to I've been trying hard not to use the word pivot, but I've just used it. So if you had to pivot into doing all these other things online, and how's that been?
When that first lockdown hit, I became a TV producer, it felt like. I was trying to work out how to do streaming of things, and I'd spend half my week recording and producing a video for people to watch and certainly outside of my area of expertise and in some ways I enjoy, you know, fiddling with something new, but it changed my role significantly, which for me actually produced anxiety as well, because it was questions of what is my role now and how do I fulfill what I'm supposed to do and what am I supposed to do, and do I do what people expect of me or what just needs to be done? And so all those questions they're a huge challenge.
Anxiety can thrive and rear its head in uncertainty and ambiguity and complexity, can't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And there's been plenty of that in the last couple of years.
Yes. Yeah.
I want to go backwards to go forward, so to speak, for a bit. What's anxiety to you? If you were to put it into a couple of words, let's start with defining it.
Yeah, that's a good question. Maybe I'll start with what it feels like in me.
There you go.
Because that's kind of where I first began to identify it, that it was this kind of churning in the gut. It was this sense of dread. It was a feeling of nausea at times. In its worst place, it was a sense of panic.
Yeah.
It was kind of this terrible feeling in my body that I wanted to avoid, but seemed that the more that I tried to avoid it, that it wouldn't go away. And so, yeah, how do I put it into a few words? It's all-encompassing feeling that is looking to direct my life.
Yeah, yeah, okay. When did that start for you, Steve?
It was my late teens and early 20s that I really began to be able to give it a name.
Yep.
To call it that, I would have had experiences of it in my teens, but I didn't have enough words or ability to articulate what I could even call it.
Yeah.
And in my late teens and early 20s, I started feeling this more intensely and talked to, I had a pastor that I went to and said, this is what I'm experiencing. And he was really helpful and understanding. And I went then and saw a counsellor, and then only then really began to be able to name it as anxiety, yeah, and to be able to articulate what I felt.
Was that helpful to be able to give it a name?
Yes, hugely for me. I think I was not naturally someone who was able to identify emotions in myself. And so even just that process of being able to distinguish between what I thought and what I felt, and then being able to name what I felt, I was always easily able to name what I thought, but to name what I felt was something that I found really difficult, and I still find more difficult than talking about what I think.
Yeah. I get what you're saying there, and so even the if I'm hearing you right, the practice or the ability of being able to describe how you were feeling and what was going on was perhaps harder for you just as a person, let alone this new thing that was rearing its head in your life.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Wow. And so, well, that was late teens, early 20s. What, just some of this backstory, because it seems to be not an uncommon thing for people where it comes, maybe it's been there for a while and we look back and I think, oh yeah, I think it was, you know, even back to this point, but I didn't really know then. But was there like a time where something definitive happened, or you have a memory of this day or week or something like that? Was it?
Yeah, there was. I was increasingly experiencing anxiety through those early 20 years, and had been and seen, you know, a psychologist for quite some time, and had some prayer counselling, and chatted to people about it. But and some of this had helped. Journaling and songwriting was an outlet for me to begin to process that. But I did begin to notice that anxiety began to make decisions for me. Do I want to come out to this thing on Saturday night? I know I'm feeling anxious, so I won't go. Or will I say yes to doing this thing this person's asking me? No, I probably won't, because I'll feel anxious if I do. So I saw it begin to shape my decisions, and I think it really came to a head with me. I was interested in this certain girl, I decided that I would like to marry this girl, but there was this conundrum that I was kind of set with, that I didn't think I could marry her, because I didn't want to live in this state of anxiety, and I thought it was unfair on her if I was constantly in this place, and I felt really stuck, and so I ended the relationship, and it was a really difficult time. And I remember one day I was walking down to lead youth group. I finished work, walked down from the station to lead youth, and I remember where I was still as I'm walking down the hill, and this thought just came into my head that was that I'm not defined by how I feel, I'm defined by who God says I am.
Right.
And that thought wasn't particularly new for me. I kind of like, it's the type of thing that I knew, but it struck me at the time and it caught my attention. And I think it was for that particular moment quite pertinent.
Yeah.
And as I sat with that, I realized that I had allowed anxiety to define me, that I began to own this feeling as mine, or I describe it, you know, I am anxious.
Yes.
That's who I am. This is my anxiety.
My anxiety.
It, and it belongs to me. Yeah. And it became part of my identity. And I realized at that point that I didn't want to be defined by anxiety. Rather, I wanted to have my identity based in who God says I am and to grow out of that. And then to experience emotions as they happen. And so I think that was a significant turning point for me, that realization that I was allowing anxiety to shape me more than I thought God intended for it to.
Mm. Wow, thank you for sharing that. So it got into an identity level for you.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And was that having a shaping, if I use a few words like identity, and was that having a, if I use the word story, was that kind of having a shaping effect on, almost like it was handing you the script or writing your story, like you said, I won't go to that, or I better not, I better break up with Claire.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, I allowed it to make my decisions for me.
Yeah.
And so I realized that wasn't a very helpful way to live. Yeah. And it was stopping me from doing the things that I wanted to do, because I loved this girl and I wanted to commit myself to her, but there was a sense that I couldn't because of a feeling.
Is it fair to say that anxiety prior to that had the power?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It had a certain power, and I think that I allowed it to have that power because it felt safer somehow to allow it to tell me what to do.
Yeah. So it sounds like that you were walking down the road, that aha moment of my identity is in Christ. So Holy Spirit moment, maybe. And so there was it's a reality moment, isn't it, where does anxiety sort of create something that's not a reality? I've when I was younger, struggled with depression. I haven't experienced a general anxiety disorder or a panic disorder, but know a lot of folks who have. But it's that same premise of where it seems to have the power over you, and as you said, starts to either make decisions for you or strongly influence them for you. And there's almost a distortion of reality where you'll say, well, if I do that, what if? And then you play that out, and inevitably it ends up in a bad situation in your mind, and therefore I'll decide not to do it to be safe. Is that fair?
Absolutely, yeah. Everything is put through this lens. So you have to put it through the anxiety, the question of anxiety and how I feel as a result of that.
Yeah.
So I think it's a perspective thing. The perspective becomes so small and focused on this one area that you lose the sense of the bigger picture.
Was that exhausting?
It's completely exhausting because it's all internal. And so you look fine on the outside.
Yes.
And have it all together. But inside it's this churning that is constantly there. And the impulse is to fight against the churn.
Right. How did you fight against it?
Well, it's to almost to avoid it. It's kind of like my response was to turn my back on it at times, to go, well, I'm not I'm not going to acknowledge it. I'm just going to avoid it. And that idea of starving it kind of thing.
Right, yeah.
But I found that pretty ineffective.
Okay. So it worked for a while until it didn't.
Yeah, it was kind of the idea of if I was spending my energy on not giving it any attention or any air, it ends up being the thing that my mind goes to. It's the classic don't think of a pink elephant.
Yes.
Yeah, it's don't be anxious. Don't think of anxiety. Don't think about the fact that your gut's churning constantly. It's always there.
Yeah. Don't look down.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. And so that wasn't effective. And then this, from that walk down the road and that affirmation of your real identity, was that a turning point or one of a number of turning points?
It was a turning point for me because I made a decision in that moment.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay.
And so it was a decision that I wouldn't be ruled by anxiety in my life. That God was my Lord and my King, and so I am going to turn to Him and what He says about me rather than base my myself and the decisions that I make on one particular feeling.
That's a big moment.
I think that's probably why it's still so vivid for me, because it was really significant.
Yeah, because in our lives, we may be able to name a number of places where we've had some revelation or illumination or something that was, quite profound. But to then have that awareness and actually make a decision at that point is a whole next level.
Mm.
So, well done. Mm. That's very encouraging. That's very encouraging. Was that, in a sense, a leap of faith, or I'm going to put my trust, let me say I want to put my trust in God, but that was very real and going to trust that He's got this.
Yeah, it was very much a leap of faith, I think, because I made the decision that I wouldn't allow anxiety to define me or to make my decisions, but I still expected it probably to be as difficult. And I don't expected the anxiety to subside at all. In that decision. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to deal with this. I'm going to walk into this. And the decision was largely around marrying Claire as well, but I'm going to marry Claire despite the fact that anxiety is there.
Yeah.
Because of a decision that I'm making that's bigger than that feeling.
Wow. Thank you for sharing. That's extremely encouraging and also just lifts a lid on the battle that you are referring to and the effect that it's had on you. From there, look, what happened after that? What are some of the key things along the journey from there as we now sort of move forward? That was a turning point. I gather you went and spoke to Claire and that things got moving there.
Eventually they got moving, but yes, I spoke to her and we've now been married for 14 years. So there you go.
Yeah, that's good. That's a great story. So our decisions have big impacts, don't they?
They do. They do. And I think that I could have avoided that by giving into anxiety, and I wouldn't have married her.
Yeah.
My life would be very different.
Yep.
Thankful for that revelation in that moment.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things in that for me, even though this feeling was so strong and it had... I'd made my decision based on this feeling. There was this sense of needing to avoid the feeling. And I think part of it was probably to do with my Christian upbringing.
Uh-huh.
With this, I don't know if you've heard that analogy of like the train, that in the train you should have faith, which is followed by fact, and with feeling at the rear, and your life should be directed by faith.
Right.
Feeling kind of just comes in the rear. In my mind, that had come to this, I interpreted that in my immature teenage way, that I should just ignore feelings. the feelings should just follow on from faith and fact, and they just get dragged along, and you don't have to take much notice of those, and they're not that important.
Yeah.
But what I think that I've discovered through the experience of anxiety, and experience anxiety has probably helped me to think through this and to consider the proper place of emotions in my life.
Wow.
And how important they actually are, and to pay proper attention to them. So I think that, you know, it's helped me to gain this greater awareness of myself as an emotional being, and as a spiritual being.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So did that change your analogy of the train?
I think that the analogy of the train works on a single level, and it doesn't work in terms of the feelings. I think that, in fact, in all our decisions, feelings are right there in the mix.
Yeah.
And it's unhelpful to put it in a linear fashion like that.
What are some of the things you mentioned in terms of being a Christian in your faith that have been helpful? Let's start with not helpful.
Yeah, not helpful.
There have been a few things that have been unhelpful along the way, maybe a few comments or
anything. Yeah, definitely. I think that I've heard teaching on what Jesus says in Matthew 6, for example, do not be anxious about anything. And Paul in Philippians 4, you know, that 4:7. To paint this picture that you can't be anxious. And if you are anxious, then there's a problem. Yep. And the solution to that problem is given to you in those passages, isn't it? It's, you know, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your request to God, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will be in your heart and mind in Christ Jesus. So it's like, this is what happens if you're anxious and you go to God. And my experience that when I go to God and I'm anxious, doesn't always solve it right there and then. Mm-hmm. And I have felt at times that because it didn't work, because I mustn't have done it right. I mustn't have gone to God right with my prayer, or I'm now guilty that I haven't, there's something wrong. So I think that's unhelpful. Teaching on anxiety in the scriptures, I think, in that way has been really unhelpful.
Maybe like you said, in that one-dimensional approach too.
Yeah.
If you've got this, then do that. Or if you've got this, then it must be this.
Yeah, it's very formulaic.
Yeah.
And isn't true to the complexity of life.
Yeah. Can that have a compounding effect there, where when you're in that place of anxiety where it's sort of like, well, see, there's something wrong with you?
Yeah. Totally. I think so. I think it has I think of it as a spiral effect.
Yeah.
That you feel anxious, you go to this for some kind of resolution, and it leaves you in a place of greater anxiety. And you can spiral in that place.
What has been helpful to you on your journey from a faith perspective? And if we also just take that out further, just what has been helpful, full stop, for Steve along the way? What's been good?
Yeah.
What's been good?
Oh, so many things. I could talk about what would be helpful for a long time.
I like it.
So initially I went to counseling. Yes. And I found that really helpful.
Yep.
I had someone who could help me to identify how I felt without judgment.
Yep.
And then to help me to identify myself what was happening. I did practices of journaling through that, which was great. A really helpful thing in my processing in those early times was songwriting. I'd pick up a guitar and I just express.
Yeah.
And I wasn't very good at the journaling part, writing down on paper the things that I was trying to say, but I was much better at just singing what I felt. It didn't have to even make any sense because it's just my expression.
I love that.
And I think over time that I was able to have words to use to process the emotions. So that was initially what really helped me. And then over time, there's certain things that I've picked up that have allowed me to manage and to know how to process the anxiety that I feel every day or every week. One thing that I find really helpful, which is what I actually take from Jesus in Matthew 6, is to come back to the present moment. So for me, anxiety is almost always future-oriented. It's about me being off somewhere in the future and worrying about that. At a few times, I've had the experience where I have been reminded in a really visceral way of something that's happened in the past as well, and that has produced this anxiety. And so for me, coming back to the present moment is a really tangible way of coming to now, not being in the future or the past, like picking up my glass of water and feeling my lips on the glass as I drink. Yeah. Because I'm not so sensory as a person. I'm much more in my mind and ideas. Yes. If I can come back to my five senses, then I can be more present with how I am now. In Matthew 6, when Jesus says, don't be anxious, the example that he actually gives is he says, look at the birds and look at the flowers. He is talking about these big ideas in life, but then he brings his listeners back to what is right in front of them. Look at their birds here. They don't sow a reap, or that God provides for them. And look at the flowers. And it's this idea of considering the thing right in front of you. I find it really helpful. So come back to the present moment. Something that I was scared to do initially but have learnt is the best thing is to face the emotion. So that idea that I used to try to avoid it.
Okay.
But facing it. And I think this is something that our society doesn't teach us very well either. Our society is all about avoiding negative emotions.
Oh, yeah.
And so I avoid feeling anxious, or if I feel angry, I try to push that down, or whatever the negative emotion is, our society says, don't go near it, medicate it, or find comfort. And I have found actually what I need to do is I need to face the emotion. And rather than to try to get rid of it, it's just to become inquisitive about it. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I'm feeling really anxious now. What's that about? And to start to begin to process that. And for me, you know, one little exercise I'll sometimes do and write down in my book, I feel and then because. So I feel anxious because, and then I'll just brainstorm.
That's good.
I feel anxious because I don't actually know why I feel anxious. I don't know. Is it because what have I got coming up? Is there something in the future that my mind's going to that I haven't actually identified yet? Or what is it? And I just write down a list of things that I may feel anxious about. And then I can look at that list and go, there is something in there that I think is what is driving this feeling. Just this idea that is helpful for me is to realize that anxiety is a response to something, that we're emotional in response to things. And so if I can get closer to identifying something that may be producing anxiety in me, then that can help. And I need to be able to do that without judgment. I don't have to go, you shouldn't feel like you're an idiot. Don't feel anxious about that. That's a stupid little thing. Just to be able to identify it and recognize what I'm responding to. And then if I can identify it or at least get close to, you know, in the ballpark, I think it's something around this, then I can decide what to do with it. Right. I can decide that, you know, okay, well, I'm anxious because I've got this podcast coming up and I don't know what to say. And I can weigh that and go, well, is that something I need to be anxious about? Like, what do I do about that? Well, what am I concerned about underneath that? Am I concerned about what people think of me? Well, probably kind of, but is that something I need to worry about? Oh, not really. I'm all right with that. Or you can go deeper into it to go, okay, what is this about? I find that if I am unwilling to do that, this anxiety kind of just becomes this big cloud of unknown, and that that can become overwhelming.
Yeah,
and stuck in that.
That was incredibly helpful. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, no.
And I think those listening will find that helpful as well. Just some thoughts that came to my mind then as well, Steve, is there's a few things. Like you were talking about in your mind there, does anxiety affect you in your mind, but also does it manifest in your body, and how's that been? Because it can affect everything, can't it?
Yeah, it does affect, and it is very physical, I think. Yeah. Well, I experience it very physically.
Yeah.
So I do experience it as in my gut, in that churning that I described earlier.
Yeah.
At times I realize I'm holding my breath.
Okay.
If I'm in a really anxiety-inducing situation and I'm not aware of my senses, then I can become really cold.
Right.
So I'll begin to shiver.
Yep.
And so I think that, yeah, it is, I don't think you can separate the mind and body in that they work together in it. And so sometimes if you can notice your body, it can be an indicator of something that's happening in your mind you might not be aware of, and vice versa.
Yeah. Like Pete Scazzaro says, the body is a major prophet. Not a minor prophet.
Totally. Yeah.
It tells us things, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. What about in yourself, it sounds to me, and you could answer this, have you grown a lot? You seem to be a very growth-orientated person. You mentioned you think a lot. Have you grown a lot in knowledge of areas that you perhaps wouldn't have grown a lot from as a result of dealing with this anxiety? And that remains ongoing, of course. But there seems to be a lot of growth that's happened here at some really different areas.
Yeah, definitely. I've grown hugely because of me in this sense of needing to face it.
Yeah, having to.
If I didn't face it, then I don't think I'd function very well, and so I guess I've just been forced to, and then I've grown. I'm very much someone who wants to learn and wants to grow.
Yeah.
But areas that has happened, I think emotional awareness is a huge one for me, and then that then feeds into emotional intelligence and ability to connect with people, which is pretty significant in my role.
It is,
So that's been an area that I think that without anxiety, those experiences of anxiety in my teens and 20s, I probably wouldn't have focused on as readily. Mm-hmm. Learning to manage myself is a big one that I think that it's helped me to grow in. Self-understanding of how this happens in community. So the way that anxiety operates with other people, and transfers between people.
It's contagious.
Yeah, the idea of it being contagious is something that I've learned and experienced and then can see happening.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes, it's like an opening of the eyes in some ways to this whole dynamic going on.
Hmm. Yeah, and I think for me, even thinking, growing up in the church and understanding spirituality,
yes.
I think I used to understand faith as something that is pretty much just cognitive.
Yep.
It's something that you believe and that you learn and then you agree to and you live out. But I think through these really deep, emotions that I've felt, I've realized how much spirituality is tied to the other things that we can't see, not just what I think, but what I feel and what I will.
Yeah.
And that, and then those things are embodied by the way that I act. So I think it's broadened my understanding of spiritual life.
Mm. So well said. Let's take coming off that, Steve, your relationship with God on that same line of question there of can you just share with us some of the effects or ways that that's changed or grown or deepened or whatever has taken place?
I think just honesty is probably one of the biggest areas. Being able to be honest, completely honest with God about how I feel and what I'm thinking in a situation without needing to try to get it right. Without needing to say the right thing. I think this my ability to process with God in all this has grown a lot. Yeah.
And do you find that now where the nature of anxiety is you can look back on something that happened that might not have been good or regret or a past issue, and then you mentioned you can project that forward and worry about it into the future. Has your relationship with God changed in the sense of you look back and his journey with you and up to this point and the changes in you, and then looking forward into the future of him being with you? I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's growth in faith that you're talking about. It's that I've seen him faithful in the past, and so that gives me more confidence in the future.
Yes.
I definitely think that is the case in my journey, and it's helped me in managing anxiety.
Right.
That I would still go, I still might feel anxious about this thing, but look, I've gone through in the past and I've got through, and I can trust.
Yeah.
I can lay this down and I can relax. It's the kind of the surrender of will. It might not be exactly what I had hoped and what I want, what my emotions are driving toward, but I can trust that what you have is good and you'll pull me through.
Yeah. Yeah. Has done and will continue to.
Yeah. That's it.
Let's talk about God's been with you on this journey, and I really appreciate you sharing that. It sounds as though Claire's been on the journey with you as well, and I'm sure there's other people in Steve's life, in your inner circle, that have been on the journey. Any thoughts or insights you can share of what it's like for people who are in our close vicinity to be on the journey with us when we're struggling with anxiety?
Yeah, I think it's actually really difficult for them to know what to do at times. And I have been so thankful for Claire, and she's been an amazing learner of what it is to help me. Because initially, I mean, I think a lot of people, the impulse is to try to fix, feel anxious, and so I've got to fix that and get it right. And I've learned to express with her more how to help me when I need space, just to be able to say, I just need to tell you this without you telling me what I need to do. And so I think that I have learned in that to work out how I can help the people around me to help me. And so they're not able to read my mind. They're not able to know what's going on. But if you got people who are in a posture to want to help, then I've been able to teach them how to help, I guess.
Yeah, that's well said. Because when you love somebody and you care for them, you from a place of love and a place of goodwill, a good intention, you want to, you know, get in there and help, don't you? And that can take the form of as you touched on, fixing solutions, the advice monster comes out and quoting scripture. It can take all sorts of form, can't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And so ability to want, like for her to want to learn to help, like is I think an important key.
Yeah.
But then also my ability to help not by being reactive, by going, oh, you're just trying to fix me again.
Yep.
But rather say, hey, babe, can we slow down? Can I just tell you this? And I don't need you to say anything afterwards. I just need you to hear me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I think the natural desire of me is for her to just know how to respond perfectly, but it's just unrealistic.
Yeah.
And so I can't expect that. I have to go, no, what I can do is I can help this relationship, and I can help myself actually by helping her to know what to say and what to do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, look, I think that's very helpful for people to hear who are caring for or as we're saying in the podcast, what do you say to someone when, or even not sure what to say, how to be present to with and for someone who's struggling with anxiety. So that's incredibly helpful.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. If someone, you know, says, you know, and someone who's anxious is trying to express themselves and the person doesn't know what to say, then they can just ask the question, what would be helpful for you now? And the person who's anxious might say, I have no idea. That is a great conversation to be in. There's a good place to be in, just to go, okay, well, let's just sit in this together.
Wow. What about for those who are on this journey and anxieties, on this journey of life, and anxieties hitched a ride somewhere in their journey? And has gotten in their backpack and is now trying to move into the spare room and take up residence. What would you say to them if they're maybe just encountering this or have been maybe a few years into a journey of anxiety?
Hmm. That's a really hard one to answer in a generic way.
It's a big question, isn't it? Is there anything that comes to mind at all?
The thing that comes to mind is to say, don't be afraid of anxiety. Maybe it's better to say, you don't need to be afraid of anxiety.
Yeah.
That anxiety, the feeling of being anxious is a God-given emotion. And it's a warning sign that there's something up ahead or something you've been reminded of that you're afraid of, that's difficult. And so you don't need to be afraid of it in the sense that it's something that needs to rule your life. But I think maybe rather than running from it in fear, I'd encourage people to turn to it and be inquisitive about it. To have this posture of curiosity towards it. It's a really uncomfortable position, like posture to take toward an uncomfortable emotion. Like it feels gross. To then go, okay, I'm just going to sit with this. And I don't, who wants to sit in the place of a negative emotion? Nobody wants to. But to be able to go, okay, I'm going to sit in this emotion and be curious about it rather than run from it in fear, that would be my suggestion.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you. Where is Steve at now? So You've this has been a number of years since this first entered your life. Where are you at now? What does it look like for you on a day-to-day basis? You mentioned, you know, I might have anxiety coming onto a podcast, or is there a here and now dynamic with anxiety that's that dance, if I could use that term, is still happening sometimes?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I experience feeling anxious most weeks.
Uh-huh.
And I can now more easily connected with certain things that, you know, I don't like being the center of attention or being up front or having to do public speaking, but these are part of my roles.
Yeah.
And so I will feel anxious. I'll at times feel anxious in anticipation of that.
Yeah.
At times I'll feel anxious off the back of that. And so, yeah, look, I think that anxiety I accept as an emotion that, maybe I feel more acutely than other people. Maybe I need to learn to manage differently. But it's definitely something that I continue to to grow with and grow through. A few things that I probably, in terms of the way it works for me now, is that oftentimes it does happen in a bit of a cyclical way. Okay. So in terms of the rhythm of my week, so Sundays are always a big day for me. Sunday morning, I usually feel anxious. Okay. And I can generally learn to reframe or tone that down to nervous rather than anxious. If I can think, okay, what's happening for me here? What am I actually afraid of? What's happening underneath this? I can go, okay, well, I still feel nervous, but that's okay. Mm. That's a reasonable response. Yep. And then I'll also often on Mondays, I'm tired. I know the tiredness for me if I haven't slept for some time, or if I've just had a big weekend, then the natural cycle is for me to be down. And when I'm down, yep, generally anxiety is there more readily. And so I can go on Mondays, okay, I'm feeling anxious. All right, well, it's Monday. Mm. I need to recuperate. I need to give myself some space. I don't need to overthink this. And then Tuesday, Wednesday, I'm kind of coming out and I'm ready to go again. So just to recognize that it is just part of the cyclical rhythm of my week as well, to experience some of that. I don't have to kind of get in a panic about what I'm anxious about. I guess there are two things, and then maybe the other thing that I feel like I'm particularly learning at the moment in terms of anxiety is the way that it operates in a community. And yeah, these last few years have been particularly significant in that, and see the way that anxiety works individually in families and communities, and you know, we've seen it in our society pretty clearly at the moment as well. So been doing some learning and reflection on that too.
Let's talk a little bit about that, because that's an area that I would say I have some interest and have done some exploration in as well. So I'm probably leaning towards a bias and an interest in this area, so I just have to declare that. It's okay to have conflicts of interest, you just have to declare them. And so declaring that one. Let's talk about systemic anxiety and how it works in relationships or families, can work in organizations, churches, governments, even like communities and nations. How have you come upon that? Because that's a journey. If I think of my own reflection, coming to that aha, like, oh wow, okay, this is much bigger and more connected than I thought. And there's a lot of rabbit holes to go down. Having been on a personal journey of anxiety, or having anxiety in your journey of life, and then you notice, or there's awareness raising of it, how it works in systems. And that just doesn't mean systems out there, does it? It can mean the systems in my home. A system or an emotional process is whenever two people get together, there's an emotional process and a relationship, and it can then start to function differently, can't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think I'm fairly new on this, and so I'm not a counsellor, I'm not trained in this area, so I speak as someone who's fairly ignorant, but just feel like I'm beginning to learn and notice these things. But I think I read a book by an Australian guy, actually, called Steve Cuss, yeah, and he's a pastor, I think he's in Colorado, and he wrote a book called Managing Leadership Anxiety.
Great book.
Found that book really helpful, and then I've been going through that book with a group of pastors.
Okay.
And we get up once a fortnight and talk through a chapter together and talk about our experience of that and how to process that. So there's been that going on, and then over Christmas I don't know where the book came from, actually. I may have ordered it, or it may have been a gift, but it's a book by a guy named Edwin Friedman called A Failure of Nerve. And that is the book. I can see that's it.
Yeah.
You can all see it.
Yeah.
And I have found that book remarkably insightful for me. I think that is a book for our times right now.
It is.
the way that he articulates, the way that anxiety works in systems, and talks about the way that the regressive approaches of people that perpetuate anxiety. I've been going through it slowly because I want to savor it. It's just beautiful, yes. And the thinking in it is remarkable.
Yeah, look, it is. And for our listeners, if you haven't encountered Steve Cuss, we'll put details in the notes of this podcast for you to look at in terms of how to find Steve, and also the Ed Friedman book called Failure of Nerve, Leadership in the Age of Quick Fix. I'd been reading it before the pandemic and have read it, been rereading it sort of through it, and it's almost a prophetic nature to it. And what he's saying, I think, is even, I agree with you, Steve, even more pertinent and relevant now. I'm nerding out here, so just, you know, bear with me. I'm a little bit animated, but it's like page 58 where he talks about how it can happen and you enter an age that actually changes within your culture and community, even your nation. And there's these usually comes off the back of a great century, and then there's these series of things that happen, and then one of them he names as a major health pandemic, etc., and where a society then starts to go into a devolution, which is downwards and backwards and is regressive.
Yeah.
It's powerful. It's a bit scary. I mean, not in the sense we want to be scared, but it's very, I think it's probably a reality check to it of oh dear, we're doing this.
Completely. My response to it is, wow, somebody has thought through this and understands it. Yeah. Like, for me, it's given me so much hope.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm seeing exactly what is happening now. This is bringing a lot of clarity.
Yes.
To what's happening, and it is on at society level, but I also see it now in the church level, and it's helping me to, yeah, as a leader in the church, to be able to step back and go, that's all right. I can let that happen. I don't need to control this.
Yes.
It's not mine to control anyway. I've always known that I don't need to control it, because I can see the processes that are at play, and I know what my role in it. I know what to do in it. I know what my role is now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's encouraged when you do get to a place in your head and your heart and you go, look, the world is not mine to save. However, I do have a role to play. And I like what Bowen and Friedman say in this area of the greatest thing that we can do, whether it's leading ourselves in our families, in our churches, organizations, whatever calling and vocation we have and the influence we have, whether large or small, is to grow in our differentiation of ourself, of being the truest, fullest version of myself. And remaining connected while I do that.
Yes.
Not being enmeshed with other people or systems, or completely detaching from them.
Yes.
But being differentiated, and I'll say that again, in being the best, fullest version of my true self, and remaining connected to people and caring about them, but not enmeshing with them or detaching from them.
Mm.
And that the more we do that and lead that way, we'll actually lead onwards and upwards, not downwards and backwards.
That's
just where we do seem to be heading at the moment, but there is always hope, isn't there?
There is hope, yeah.
What else have you found out of that in this journey that you're on, Steve, in terms of the systems anxiety, its level of contagiousness and how it operates in our organisations?
Lots of things. I think that one thing that I've found really helpful is just to understand more what he talks about. I can't remember the language he uses, but those regressive responses that produce and perpetuate anxiety. So he names four of those and then says those four combined lead to an undifferentiated leader in society. So they're reactivity, hurting. So reactivity being, I'm just going to react to whatever somebody says to me and spit back at them. Hurting is where I just join with whatever the group does and says anxiety in that place, of course, is contagious, and so I just take on the group's anxiety. This blame displacement, where I'm looking for a place to put blame rather than taking responsibility for myself and who I am, what I can do in the situation. And the fourth one being quick fix mentality. Wanting to have everything changed and fixed and in order right now and not being able to sit in the tension. So those four as areas of producing anxiety in any system, in a family or a community, I find them really insightful and really helpful. And so if we can, I think if I can understand those, then I can learn to manage myself in that place.
Yeah, it does come back to that. I think that's a really wonderful point you make. It's not necessarily about us trying to fix the whole system by tackling the whole system or a whole country or a whole community. It comes back to what is my part in that and how do I lead myself, isn't it?
Well, that's it. And this is Steve Cuss, I think it is, that has this, he talks about when we can be a differentiated person or a differentiated leader in any of those systems, then our health can infect ill health.
Exactly.
And so most anxiety is, is contagious, and that's ill health affecting somebody's health. And that's what we're used to in the world. If you've got COVID, then you've got to be careful because your ill health will infect someone else's health. And Steve Cuss talks about what the gospel doing and what you see Jesus continually do is that turns the other way. And Jesus' health infects people's ill health and it makes them whole and brings health. And this is the idea of differentiation. If we can be differentiated people who have emotional independence but also remain relationally connected, then our health then can infect the system in the long run. But it's not our job to try to change it as such. It's our job to manage ourselves.
Yeah. You've said that succinctly and really well. So, as I said earlier, I could really nerd out on talking about this system side of it, but we should stop there because we... Yeah, and just want to say thank you for today. You have just been so articulate and vulnerable and candid, and just want to thank you and honour you for that because I know for a fact it's going to be of blessing to those who are listening and really leaning into this. And just thanks for sharing some of the story and the journey that you've been on and are on, and where you're at and who you are. We're richer for it. So thank you.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. I hope it can be of help.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Bye for now.
Great. Thanks, Nicholas.